For Alabama Public Radio, I'm Lacey Alexander. This is Simplified. It's a show where we take the complex and make it easier to understand. Hot-button topics, buzzwords, and current events all made more digestible through interviews with experts. Your questions answered and your confusion remedied. I'm not afraid to ask dumb questions, and neither should you be. It's how we take the world around us and make it simpler. You've likely heard all about the new skincare trends taking over cosmetic stores. What used to be a process as simple as wash your face before bed is now a massive industry, with some facial washes, creams, scrubs, and oils costing as much as a car payment. While these premium products are probably not a necessity, skincare is necessary no matter your age, economic background, ethnicity, or gender. So here to discuss best practices for care and bring us back down to earth as far as skincare is concerned is Dr. Lauren Cole, MD. Dr. Cole sees both medical and cosmetic dermatology patients in her practice while also serving as the assistant director of the dermatology residency program at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. An active member of the American Academy of Dermatology and other professional societies, Dr. Cole is a skin savant and has a passion for keeping the public informed on the intricacies of skincare and what skin issues might need extra attention. Tell me your definition of dermatology.
That is the field of medicine that cares for the skin of patients, whether it be preventative care or treatment of skin-related illnesses or malignancies.
Awesome. So when a dermatologist sees a patient for the first time, what are some of their first questions? What do professionals need to know first when analyzing someone's skin?
Their general medical history, just like when you see any other physician, so other health issues, current medications, allergies, the basics, and then also personal or family history of any skin cancers or precancers, any history of any skin disease diagnoses in the past, and of course what their concerns are and what brought them there that day.
Gotcha. So dermatology is obviously a specialist role. Are there specialists within dermatology? Like if I went to see you and I had something, would you be like, I need to send you to a specific dermatology? Or would I see you, Dr. Cole, for just about anything?
Most dermatologists are general dermatologists, so can see and treat most things. But there are some accredited fellowships where you can get subspecialty training. So there's pediatric dermatology, Mohs and micrographic surgery, which is like cutaneous oncology, the surgeons that take care of skin cancers. There is dermatopathology, so those that look at biopsy or skin specimens under the microscope. And then there are several subspecialties within dermatology that are not necessarily accredited fellowships, but physicians might go in and get additional training on. So there's the field of like oncodermatology. So those that take care of cancer patients and the associated skin issues that can come with cancer care. So rashes from chemotherapy and things like that. There's what we call immunodermatology. So patients with autoimmune diseases. There's rheumatologic dermatology. So taking care of patients with autoimmune diseases that are related to like lupus and other similar conditions. You can subspecialize or kind of become interested in a certain section of the field unofficially, but then become an expert as you see more and more of those patients.
What other systems or parts of the body would you say skin health is most tied to? Is it diet? Is it mental health? Is it sleep? All of the above or something else?
Dermatology is one of those really interesting subspecialties where we interact with so many other fields of medicine or parts of patients' health. There are multiple systemic diseases that can manifest with skin-related changes, as well as the skin changes sometimes can be the first presenting sign of a serious internal illness or malignancy. So there's a lot of overlap between all different fields of healthcare.
Anytime I Google, why am I breaking out here? It's like, well, it could be one of a million things.
Right.
So it's clearly, sometimes it's tied to something, sometimes it's just, you just have oily skin. But what frustrates me as a woman is that anytime I Google any symptom, it's like, well, maybe it's your hormones. You know, it's literally any symptom in the world could fall under hormonal problems. But what are the differences you would say in how dermatology practices change between men and women?
Sometimes it has to deal with not necessarily that your hormones are abnormally high or out of balance, but just certain people's skin can respond differently to normal hormone levels and changes. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. We've all got some kind of hormone mess. It just kind of depends on how else we're built.
Right. And the way we choose how to treat those in men or women depend more on kind of the outcome we want versus the origin of the problem. So a woman with hormonal hair loss and acne, we want to suppress the effects of our normal fluctuating hormones on the skin to improve the acne and hair growth. But we might not want to use a medication that is what we call anti-androgen in a male patient, because then they would have feminizing side effects. But there's only a few diseases where that really makes a big difference.
This is a really great segue into my next question. It's hard to imagine that there's a human being among us who has not had some kind of acne at some point. Tell us the basics of that condition and why acne problems vary so heavily from person to person.
Acne is a very multifactorial disease. So like we already touched on, there is definitely a hormonal component to it. That's why we see it mostly at puberty or afterwards. There are changes in the skin that happen in any person that goes through puberty with increased oil production, sensitivity of our kind of androgen receptors that are controlling that. But there are a lot of other factors that go into acne. It can be medication induced, related to skincare usage. And there are some links between lifestyle choices and diet with acne. So yeah, there are a lot of factors that go into acne and genetic factors. Severe acne definitely can run in families.
What in the world, Dr. Cole, is combination skin? How can people have both oily and dry skin at once?
Because not all skin on our body is created equal. There are definitely different proportions of like glands and other features across the skin. And so there can be areas where you have more what we call sebaceous glands, as the glands that produce the oil, and areas of the face or body that have less. And so there are ways where your skin can be, like you said, a combination.
Gotcha. It is summertime, Dr. Cole, so I feel it is appropriate to ask about sun care. Tell us what the SPF number on sunscreen really means and why it matters.
The SPF on sunscreen stands for sun protective factor. So that is a rating system that's done by the manufacturer that tests the sunscreen. And they generate that number based off of, so if the sunscreen is applied appropriately, time that it takes for that skin to be sensitive to the sun after application. So the higher the SPF, the longer duration till that sun exposure affects the skin. No sunscreen is 100% protection, so that's always something to keep in mind. And we definitely recommend additional sun protective factors. So whether that be wide brim hats, sun protective clothing, things like that. And reapplication of sunscreen.
Do you need a different sunscreen product for your face versus your body?
Most people choose to use something different on the face just because they want something that feels a little more elegant on the skin, that's more designed for facial application, maybe less oily, or what we call non-comedogenic. Especially women may choose to use tinted sunscreens that kind of combined purpose of providing a little bit of skin coverage as well as sunscreen protection. but it's not absolutely necessary if you're choosing a good product that's formulated for both the face and body.
Let's jump now into some audience questions. My first question is a really interesting question from my buddy, Lindsay. Lindsay asks, what would you say is the fine line in your practice as far as insurance is concerned? Are there a lot of concerns as a dermatologist that you see that are strictly cosmetic and thus don't fall into insurance coverage? Or as a medical professional, do you find that most of the things you deal with are covered by insurance companies?
There are some things that are not covered by insurance that insurance companies consider cosmetic. So I do about 20% of my practice is also cosmetic dermatology. So I see probably a greater proportion of non-insurance covered procedures and concerns than other academic dermatologists. Some of those things may include removal of benign lesions, so things that are of no harm to your health and more patients want removed because of appearance. And then treatment of skin changes that are considered more appearance related versus functional. So maybe pigmentation is a good example that we see patients for that is a common concern that's not considered medically covered by a lot of insurances.
This is another really interesting question from Danielle. She wants to know what your opinions are on Accutane. She and a few friends took it when they were younger, and it felt really severe. It felt like cutting your arm off to like heal a minor wound. So she really just wants to know your opinion on that drug.
I think it's a great drug for patients that are suffering from severe or persistent acne. So they're kind of two main categories of patients that we use to treat Accutane. One are patients with very severe acne, nodulous cystic, deforming severity of acne that could lead to very disfiguring scarring and things like that. And then there is a second bucket of patients that we treat with Accutane, that those that just have persistent acne that may respond to traditional treatments, but we can't get patients off of those treatments. So it just persists, and it might not be so severe, but it's just persistent to the point where it's a big influence on their daily life. It is the only drug that we have to treat acne that's potentially curative. About 80% of patients that complete an appropriate course of Accutane or the generic is isotretinoin are cured from their acne with very low risk of recurrence. It does have a bad rep. If you start Googling things, you might see, oh, it's linked to all these severe conditions or severe side effects. But recent research has shown that a lot of those things, such as inflammatory bowel disease, depression, suicide risk, are more associated with the acne severity and then found in patients with acne that warrants this treatment rather than the treatment itself. I mean, there's still side effects that we monitor for while patients are on it. The main concern is of women that are of childbearing potential, that there is a high risk of birth defects if a patient became pregnant while they were taking it. Otherwise, it's something that we can easily get through the course and have substantial effects on a patient's quality of life with the treatment.
Just out of pure curiosity, what's in the drug that makes birth defects a possibility?
It is a high dose vitamin A derivative. So there are other drugs that we use that are also of concern. Just this one is used much more widely. And so that's why patients and the general population are much more aware of that risk.
This is from Nicole. Do you actually need to buy $100 plus skincare, or can drugstore brands achieve the same thing?
No, you don't have to spend that much money on skincare. I think there's a lot of marketing involved in skincare. There are a lot of trends that are playing into this organic skincare and clean skincare that are all really just marketing. They're not legit concerns for patients. It depends on kind of what your goals are with your skincare. There are certain ingredients or chemicals that are can be very unstable and hard to formulate. So maybe investing in the products that if you're wanting that ingredient, invest more in those products, but you can invest less in other ones that are very simple products. So, you know, a gentle cleanser, a moisturizer, those don't necessarily need to be high end. But if you're investing in maybe a vitamin C serum, vitamin C is a very unstable molecule, hard to formulate, hard to make sure you're getting enough of the active ingredient. Maybe that one you want to spend a little more money on.
Very interesting. And the follow-up to her question from her is, are there types of skincare products you think everyone should use? And are there skincare ingredients or products that you think are a little overrated?
I'd say the three pillars of a good skincare regimen for kind of an adult would be sunscreen. You know, we want SPF, obviously 30 or higher. My preference would be 50 or higher. And you want it to be broad spectrum. You want it to cover UVA, UVB. If the person has any concern about pigmentation, you want that to be a tinted sunscreen, because tinted sunscreens have iron oxides in them, which help additionally protect against visible light, which can help treat and or prevent pigmentation. The second kind of pillar of skincare is an antioxidant serum. So that can be vitamin C, vitamin E, and there's some various other antioxidants. That's going to help be proactive at preventing damage to your skin. So whether it's coming from sun that leaks through your sunscreen or pollution or other environmental factors, this will help prevent the slow damage and degradation that happens to our skin as we age. And then the third thing would be a retinol or retinoid or prescription version at night. And that's going to help with any concerns of acne, again, pigmentation, and again, help reverse any damage that occurs to the skin over time. And then you want to add on, you know, basic cleanser and moisturizer to that regimen. But those are the three kind of active ingredient or active products I would recommend in general skincare. I would say, you know, those types of things other than the sunscreen, the moisturizer, cleanser are not necessarily needed in our like pediatric population unless we are treating acne or something like that where we want to have that prescription retinoid on. So I do think this focus that we're seeing in preteens and children on skincare is not necessary and should not be advocated by parents.
Gotcha. And would you say those products are dangerous or just you're just caking on stuff you don't need?
Both. You could cause a lot more kind of damage to the skin barrier if they're using products that are not appropriate for their skin type or skin age. But also, yeah, it can be a big waste of money and effort for those kids.
So this is from Jeff. Do those SPF shirts and other clothes really work?
Yes, they do. They do. So they have ratings just like sunscreens do. So what their rating is called the UPF. And they are rated to certain levels as well. And they can help a lot with sun protection just because the average American does not apply as much sunscreen and as often as they should. And a lot of times, like I said, sunscreen alone is not 100%. So wearing clothing, sun protective clothing can make a big difference in protecting your skin.
Cool. And Jeff also wants to know, other than sun and sun exposure, what else is a big risk to our skin?
So there are other things that can be taken, I guess, internally. So food and lifestyle choices, pollution and things like that. So smoking can severely damage your skin. Alcohol consumption can damage the skin over time. So yes, there are other things other than sun that can contribute to the decline in our skin's appearance or damage it over time.
All right, this is from Rob. Is there some kind of preventative care I should be doing every single day?
Just like what we talked about already, so sun protection every day is essential. And one thing that we do see as people age, our skin barrier is not as strong as we age over time. And so also proper moisturization can play a big role in maintaining your skin's health as we get older.
And he also asks, what is one dermatology myth you hear all the time that you wish would go away?
Not necessarily that I wish they would go away, but it's a big misconception that patient thinks that water consumption orally makes a big difference with skin hydration. Our skin hydration or moisturization is more things that we apply externally rather than anything we're taking internally, unless you were like severely dehydrated and ill. Just regular normal water consumption does not play a big role in our skin hydration or moisturization.
I see what you mean, though. As a doctor, you don't want to say, don't drink water. You don't,
right.
Don't necessarily want to not, you know, promote that. But I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. So one last question from Rob. Is there an age people should start regularly seeing a dermatologist, or is this really a specialist thing?
In general, I'd recommend seeing a dermatologist if you have no medical concerns and more for preventative care, probably in your mid-20s to early 30s, to start with regular skin examinations. The rates of skin cancer in the United States are just incredible. About every 1 in 4, 1 in 5 people will have skin cancer over their lifetime, and we're seeing them at younger and younger ages. So I would say that would be a good time to get established for just a general proactive skin exam.
This is from Dennis. Dennis wants to know if there's any latest interventions in technology in your field you're excited about, and wants to know if dermatologists are using AI in their practice at all.
There has been a lot of study in AI in dermatology, particularly in diagnosis of malignant versus benign lesions. Of course, like with many other fields of medicine, they do show that the AI is not superior to a dermatologist, but the best results are when used in conjunction with a board-certified dermatologist. There are also new technologies consistently being developed for treatment of skin conditions. One new exciting thing is, going back to our discussion on acne, there is a new laser to treat acne that we just acquired at UAB that should be open for patient care in the next few weeks, and is potentially another curative option for acne other than isotretinoin. So that is something to be excited about. And then there are obviously tons of new development in drug therapies for conditions that we treat. So new biologic therapies, new small molecule therapies, new drugs for patients. So yes, that is always the biggest development that we're seeing in dermatology.
All right, from Andrew, are there ways that regular non-dermatologists, non-board certified people can examine their own skin at home, and what problems should they look for?
Yes, there are good guides that are provided online by like the American Academy of Dermatology of what things to look for if you are examining your own skin. So the classic thing that we counsel patients about with kind of monitoring their moles is the ABCDEs to look for changes that might be concerning for melanoma. So A is asymmetry, B is border, C is color, D is diameter, so large lesions, or E is evolution. So those are the big things that you can look for. So if a lesion is not round and it's asymmetric, that might be something to be concerned about and go see your dermatologist. If it has an irregular border, multiple colors, or the color is changing, it's growing or changing. Those are all concerning things to kind of monitor for.
All right. And Andrew's second question is, and I know you said earlier that there's still early research on this, but from what we do know, what kind of diet affords us the best skin health?
Yeah, so the research is more into, I guess, relationship to inflammatory skin diseases, more so than overall skin health. But we have found that a lot of the conditions we treat seem to be worsening by pro-inflammatory foods. So foods that are what we have called high glycemic index foods, so ones that are very sugary and starchy or highly processed foods, may potentially worsen skin conditions. And that might also relate to overall skin health. And a lot of study has been done into the Mediterranean diet, so diet that's high in fruits and vegetables, maybe nuts, olive oil, fish, and lower levels of these processed foods. Lower levels of dairy, of red meats, may be good for overall health and have been shown to be helpful in patients with certain skin conditions like atopic dermatitis, psoriasis, acne, things like that.
Ashley says, as an adult acne sufferer, would you recommend that I do my shower at night or in the morning?
As someone with acne, you probably need to cleanse morning and night, at least for the face or the area that's affected with acne. But for your overall, like cleansing your entire body, it shouldn't matter too much. I would say as someone with acne, you want to make sure if you do wear makeup or sunscreen during the day, that is definitely washed off at night before applying your appropriate skincare.
Wonderful. And her follow-up is, what are the difference between nighttime and daytime products and why is it important that they're done at different times?
So some products, we need their protective benefit during the day, such as sunscreen or our vitamin C or antioxidant serums. We want that protection to be provided during the day, so those should always be applied in the morning. And then certain products may be unstable or inactivated by sunlight, so they need to be applied at night. And one example of that is our retinoids. Also, some acne fighting ingredients don't necessarily work well together. And so they need to be applied at different times of the day to make sure they don't counterbalance their effectiveness.
Just some closing questions from me, Dr. Cole. When patients come into your practice, what are their biggest anxieties? And if you could help us relieve those anxieties on the air today, just some big ones that you always hear, what would you say to our listeners?
I'd say one thing that comes up a lot of times is patients apologize for not being prepared for their visit. So they'll say, oh, sorry, I didn't get my color done, or sorry, I didn't shave my legs, or sorry, I didn't put my moisturizer on, or oh, I need a pedicure. Don't worry about those types of things when you're coming in for your skin exam. We are always happy to do your exam in any state. You don't feel like you have to be prepped for it like you were going to a job interview or anything like that.
You've been listening to Simplified. Special thanks to our expert guest, Dr. Lauren Cole. Want your question read on the show? Our upcoming interviews are on oral health and dentistry and pet cats. Email me at simplified@apr.org. This show is a production of Alabama Public Radio, a service of the University of Alabama.